Welcome to Wild Duck Living, the program about living, working, and having fun sustainably in Mendocino County and beyond. This is Johanna Wild Duck, and today a pre-recorded program, an interview with Gloria and Stephen Decatur that I recorded on May 3rd. I hope you enjoy this interview. Welcome to Wild Duck Living. Today's program is a pre-recorded program with Gloria and Stephen Decatur of Live Power Community Farm, a 40-acre biodynamic, organic, community-sustained agriculture farm that provides fresh, high-quality food for 160 households in the San Francisco Bay Area and Mendocino County. They also host on-farm school visits, apprentice training, and farm-related workshops. Their innovative approach to farmland ownership, economics, and food distribution revitalizes the culture of land stewardship by creating a conscious, mutually supportive relationship between farmers, consumers, and nature. Welcome, Gloria and Stephen, to Wild Duck Living. We're going to talk today about several different topics. We'll start out talking about Live Power Farm. What kind of a farm is it? We'll get a little bit of the history and how the farm is different from perhaps farms that you think of when you think of a standard farm. Then we will talk about what is Community Sustained Agriculture, CSA, and then we will go on to talk about sort of the larger picture of associative economics, which is a model that Steve will talk about that is designed to help keep farmland in farming and to value farmland for farming. And then towards the end, we will talk about a draft proposal for a Mendocino community-based farming network. All right, well, let's get started by talking about Live Power Community Farm. How did you get started? How long have you been doing this? And tell us a little bit about your farm and how it's perhaps different.
Well, I've been on this property for about 33 years, and the first 8 years or so we were subsistence farming, actually. And then we started a farmer's market along with some other folks in Covelo, and we did that for about, 6 years. And then in 1988, we heard about the concept of a community working together with the farmer to take care of a farm and operate it, and that sounded to us like the best way to approach small-scale farming, and we initiated it that year with a group of about 15 people in San Francisco, and then the next year we stopped doing the farmer's market in Covelo, and many of the customers became members of the farm, and we became 100% community-based as a farm and not market-based. And so this will be our 22nd season as a community-based farm, and we're looking forward to it. The crops are out there, and
besides growing vegetables, we also we host apprenticeship training here, and also we have school classes that come visit the farm in the spring and the fall. It's mostly Waldorf school classes from all over the Bay Area, and they spend 3 days with us and find out about what it is to be farmers.
I'd like to talk more about the school visits and the community-sustained agriculture in a moment. I'd like to first maybe find out a little bit more about how you farm and also talk a little bit about the fact that you are a family farm.
Well, one of the goals with the farm has been, from the beginning, really, to base our farming on solar energy and minimize our fossil energy use and footprint and pollution as much as we could. So we've designed the farm around that, and we're dealing with a 40-acre farm organism. About 4 of those acres we use for vegetable growing, and we grow about 2 acres in different grains, oats, barley, wheat, grain corn, and we've grown spelt and other things. And then the balance of the land is pasture and hay, and so that's to feed our livestock, because the way that energy gets used in farming, well, you have the tillage energy, so in, instead of using tractors, we use we have four Belgian draft horses, and we use those for all our soil tillage. And so we have to feed them out of the farm. And then the other place that farms today use a lot of energy is in their fertility. You know, if they import compost, all of that material has been hauled to a compost facility and then turned usually mechanically, and then it gets hauled back to the farm. And all of that results in a pretty big energy footprint. So we're trying to create that compost and fertility out of the crops of the farm and the animal manures, and that's one of the reasons that we have the livestock. So, and then, of course, feed for the animals would be another place that most farms import fertility, but we're trying to close that loop in the farm.
So the energy that you use for plowing, you know, that your draft horses comes from your own farm. So do you have any off-farm inputs at all in terms of fertilizers or things like that?
Occasionally, we get like ground oyster shell. The soils here are a little low in calcium, so we have to use some, calcium, and usually a form of oyster shells or sometimes gypsum, which is a mined calcium mineral source also. And but as far as compost, we create that out of the farm. And I have used seaweed a little bit. I've used rock dust a little bit, but I find that once we start really using the biodynamic compost in the farm, that the seaweed or rock dust really doesn't have much effect, and it's, you know, whatever it's doing is being done with the compost. So that's where we focus our energy.
So the compost is your fertilizer, basically?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the word biodynamic. I know many of our listeners will know what that means, but for those of us who don't, can you elaborate a little bit, and perhaps what made you decide to go in the direction of biodynamic?
Well, I had always farmed organically, but my training was with Alan Chadwick in Santa Cruz in the 60s, and he actually brought up information about biodynamics and Rudolf Steiner, who was the founder of biodynamic agriculture, through lectures that he gave to commercial farmers in Austria in 1923. And those lectures were recorded, and they have become the basis that then people all over the world have worked from those ideas and developed biodynamic agriculture. And there's kind of three basic tenets. One is that the farm is an organism, like a body, and to be really healthy, it has to have all of its appropriate organs, and they have to be in balance and working together. So when we look at a biodynamic farm, we're not talking usually about just, plant crops or just an animal operation. We're talking about having all of those elements of the physical realm of the soil, and then the plant realm, the life forces, the etheric forces in the plant realm, and then the animals and the influence that they bring, their sort of astral qualities that they bring into the farm. And then, of course, it isn't a farm without the human being, so there's the human being and the individual spiritual forces that a human being can help coordinate in a farm. And so there's that image of the farm as a self-contained organism, and we work with that. And we also recognize that Rudolf Steiner pointed out in those lectures that the environment of the plant is not just the soil, it's also the whole cosmos, and that's obvious in terms of sun and even the moon, the tremendous influences, but there's also all the planetary influences. And so we try to be aware of what's going on in the cosmos and planetary motions, and try to coordinate our work and our planting and even our cultivation and our harvesting to work in harmony with those planetary conditions, and to help strengthen the forces of growth overall and balance them. And then Steiner also suggested making some special preparations, they're called, materials that human beings can make made out of natural materials. There's one set of six materials, preparations that we make that are put in a compost pile when it's nearing completion. And the plant materials he suggested are stinging nettle, dandelion, yarrow, chamomile, oak bark, and valerian. And so in each of those plant materials, there's an appropriate animal sheath that they can be put in that works with the same processes, like oak bark is a calcium process. And so the skull of a cow is a place in an animal where there's the greatest concentration of calcium activity, but there's also a vessel. And so we use the brain cavity of a skull for the oak bark. And then that's buried in the earth during the winter when the earth forces are kind of drawn in and are incubating for the next year, and then it ferments in the earth under those planetary conditions, and then we take it up and we can store it, and then when we get a compost pile ready, it's like homeopathic in dosage, just like a teaspoon of each of these preparations into a hole in different parts of the pile. And so that helps guide that whole fermentation process instead of letting it just take whatever course. It's almost like culturing yogurt or something, you know, in a way. And so those are compost preparations. He also suggested making a horn manure that uses the manure of the cow and a horn and creates, again, a ferment that we then take a 5 teaspoons and 5 gallons of water and stir that rhythmically, creating a vortex and then breaking it up and going the other direction. And then that's sprayed on the soil when we're getting ready to plant, when the soil is worked and open. And that works with the humus formation processes in the soil and the root growth and just generally the fertility and growth forces in the soil. And then the other preparation is made with ground crystal, naturally occurring crystal that we powder, and again using a horn but burying in the summer because this one works with the light processes. And then that's stirred in the water for an hour rhythmically and then sprayed on the plant when it's ripening the organ that you want to use for food. And it helps the plant metabolize, it helps it work with the light and reach a fuller ripening process and creates more quality in the produce. So those three areas, the farm as an organism, and then recognizing the cosmic influences in farming and trying to harmonize with them, and then these preparations that Steiner suggested that we could make. It's a new material that we're making in that those materials that come from nature, but they can only be put together by a human being and, you know, and then brought back into the world to try to support life processes and strengthen those life processes.
I'd like to take a moment to let our listeners know that you are listening to Wild Oak Living here on KZYX and Z. My guests today are Gloria and Stephen Decatur of Live Power Community Farm in Covelo. It was fascinating for me to listen to the biodynamic processes or applications that you go through. I'm wondering, since you did so many years of organic farming and then you moved towards biodynamics, have you seen any difference in terms of how things grow or what kinds of things you can grow since you've started to go biodynamic?
Yeah, I actually started reading the lectures and then joined the Northern California Biodynamic Group, which meets quarterly at different farms around Northern California. I hurt my back, and so I was down, so I got into that. And that was like, I think, 1986 or so, a little before we started community-based farming. And what I noticed was that the compost had a more lasting effect in the soil. It, you know, a lot of times you put in compost and you wonder where it went or what it did. But I started to see changes in soil texture that were improvements, and soil that was harder and sort of seized was easier to penetrate with the disc and with tillage. So that was one thing that I noticed. And then another thing I noticed was the whole environment of the farm seemed to be more attractive to all kinds of life. I started seeing lots of frogs, little green frogs showing up in the nursery, and I started to see the bird life and all other kinds of things come in more to the farm. And I also noticed the quality of the food and the health of the plants just generally seemed to be a little less trouble with pests and problems that are probably the result of imbalances in the growth in the plants. And I think that this sort of slower but really specially prepared fertilizing process through the biodynamic compost and those sprays and preparations, I think really helped create a better balance for growth. And the flavor in broccoli, I noticed, was more even and better flavored.
We've really noticed through the years the difference in the nutritional quality and how well that food is really feeding us. And, you know, we can tell that we've eaten biodynamic produce.
Well,
Our sons really know the difference also.
Actually, yeah, I was going to ask you about your sons in a moment, because you are lucky to have three sons who are all involved in running your farm. What is it like to run a farm with your family?
Well, I mean, they all have their own, you know, projects that they're doing, and they help in, you know, in certain aspects. They're not running it with us on a daily basis, but definitely they have had major input, particularly in building and the horsework.
And haying. They take on, you know, some areas like that and work with them. But also we are working with generally about six people a year who come into the farm to farm with us for the season and, you know, get practical hands-on experience in living the life of a working farm and, you know, learning the skills and practicing those skills and seeing if this is a kind of work that they might be cut out for. And you know, sometimes people stay, our growing season is basically March through November, and we try to work with people on that basis, and sometimes people stay 2 and even 3 years. If they want to learn horse farming skills, then that takes a bit longer. And it's a combination, it's sort of an extended family between our kids, and the different roles that they can play in the farm, and you know, sometimes helping teach about the horses, and sometimes helping with building and construction or teaching other people about that. And just, you know, if there's a big crunch on a harvest day, we can ask them to step in and help, and they usually will be willing to do that.
One thing that many people who didn't grow up on a farm often perhaps don't realize is that farming is much more than putting crops on the ground and then tending them and harvesting, right? There's also maintenance, and there's building, and there's tools. There's all kinds of other work to be done on a farm besides planting and harvesting, right?
Yes, that's right. The whole infrastructure has got to be working. Otherwise, you know, you need to water something and the pipe doesn't work, you're in big trouble, and you got to backtrack. And so there's quite a bit with that and with tools. Fortunately, most of the horse equipment that we use is not super complicated, and if you have basic welding and metalworking skills, sometimes we have to make parts because we can't, you know, that equipment was made in the 20s and 30s, and you can't just go to a store and buy it, but you can often make the parts.
And our sons really have developed many of those skills in terms of fixing the tools and doing the buildings, and it's been, you know, absolutely wonderful to have them around to be able to do that.
I'd like to perhaps at this point go go towards talking, well, actually I have one more question before we talk about community supported agriculture. You mentioned and that's the apprenticeship and the school program. You've had a number of apprentices over the years, and I'd like to know, what is your experience in terms of how many of these, I'm assuming mostly young people, that come to you as apprentices go on then to maybe start their own farm, how many of them stay in farming?
I'm not quite sure what the percentage is, but at least 30 or 40 have gone on to farming and set up their own farms. I mean, we pretty much stay in touch with most of them, and they've set up various aspects. I mean, one of our former apprentices, she grows grains, and she was one of the first people to develop a grain share CSA, and so she's doing grains, beans, and legumes to send to our members, both in Mendocino County and in the Bay Area. And yet, even if they don't go on to farming, they have a much better appreciation and understanding of farming and can take that into the world and share it with others.
Yeah, and they might also get involved with some kind of social work or education with children or something like that, that, you know, having a background of real experience in a farm just amplifies what they have to share in any kind of social or ecological work or educational work.
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, it might be 50 or 60.
I don't know.
Because then they change. You know?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know, it's difficult for young people to start in farming because land, generally, unless they have inherited wealth, accessing land is really a stumbling block, and then capital to get started with.
Yeah, and we'll talk, I think, more about that when we talk about associative economics and about your farming network proposal. I'd like to maybe at this point, because it just sort of fits to talk about community-sustained agriculture, because that is, I think, the model that you've chosen for supporting your farm, and it seems to be a promising and growing model all over the world, I think, for farms who are in the vicinity of major residential areas like the Bay Area or like Northern California, to support themselves by providing food directly to consumers. And I'd like to invite you to talk a bit about what CSAs are in general, and specifically what your CSA is like.
Yeah, ideally, our farm is a community of people, of eaters, and us as the farmers working together to maintain this 40-acre farm. And then we plan the food production to try to meet the needs of feeding that community of people. And, of course, the budget, the operating budget of the farm is, describes all the costs that we encounter in operating the farm and in producing that food. And so then if that community, in our case of about 160 households, splits up that operating budget on an annual basis and meets those costs, then we have a stable economic basis for the farm, and also all the food that we grow then is distributed to those people. So we're an example of the original idea of what's come to be called community-supported agriculture, in that, we're not a market farm at all. We don't go to farmers markets or retail outlets. And in this way, we're not really selling food. The people that are supporting the budget are helping us operate the farm, and then the result is used by them. And so that's a very different relationship. It's a much more conscious economic relationship than a market relationship. And in a market relationship, the money is used sometimes to take advantage, and not seeing that the consumers on one end may be thinking that the lowest price is the most important factor in farming or in their food system, and the farmers on the other end realizing that they've got to get enough money to stay in business, or they're not going to be able to do their work. But because those two ends of the spectrum are not in partnership with each other and really consciously working together, it creates a disconnect and a sort of struggle, competition between those two ends. And that's typical of a market economic relationship, and it's a relationship that will always be controlled by the bottom line, the lowest denominator economically. And in a community-based farm and in an associative economic form, a different, not a market economic form, we're actually starting from the other end and saying, what are the needs of the earth? How do we have to take care of it? What are the costs there? What are the needs of the producer, and how do we meet those costs? And then what are the needs of the eater, the user? And we let those needs define the economic limits. And so then people are taking their money and using it in support of someone that's doing something that isn't support of them. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually changing the dynamics of the use of money, and instead of it being controlled by a kind of a mechanistic bottom line mechanism, it's actually controlled by the decisions that we make humanly in recognizing that we need to support each other, the eater and the grower and the earth, that we need to support each other so that we can remain whole. And that creates a very different economic dynamic that starts to bring in consciousness and brotherhood, even mutual support.
And mutual understanding.
I think that we don't really have, we're not going to have sustainable agriculture until we actually change the economic system to, you know, an associative economic system or a sustainable economic system.
Can you, before we talk about the sort of the underlying economic model, can you just describe for listeners who perhaps may not have been associated with the CSA before, or who may not have experienced it, what it is and how it works from the point of view of the eater end of the spectrum?
Well, someone would decide to get a share, say in our case, you know, particularly Mendocino County, you know, someone would decide that they want to be a part of the farm. And then, so what we do is our vegetables are available from the beginning of May through Thanksgiving, and they are making a commitment to the farm for that 30-week season. And so they know ahead of time what it's going to cost, and then each week they will receive, and in this particular situation, we have members in Covelo, Willits, and Ukiah, and so Covelo, they come to the farm, Willits and Ukiah meet them at a drop site in both of those places, and I bring their vegetables, and they come and pick it up, and then we exchange baskets, and they know each week, certain time, they're not totally sure what's going to be coming each week, because it's going to be what's in season. And if some certain things are, you know, bountiful, then they'll get more of that. If some things maybe have had a hard time, they might get less of that. But we have such a variety that generally speaking, you know, they will get somewhat of a consistent amount over all the season. But the way we run our CSA is whatever is available. So when we start next week, our first delivery is next Tuesday, May 6th, and we will have what is ready now in May, so it will be greens and
lettuce and spinach and radishes. And stir-fried greens and kale and little turnips, baby turnips.
And then as the other vegetables are ready throughout the season, then we'll add those, and some things will stop, and then we'll change. And generally, you know, the beginning of the season is, you know, the basket might be a little smaller, but then it builds up and it gets quite bountiful and then goes throughout the season.
And when when the melon season hits and the pumpkin season hits, the basket gets really heavy.
Really big, yeah. And then it's time to freeze some corn and make some tomato sauce and extend the summer harvest into the winter.
Yeah. I make myself lots of tomato soup with all the different vegetables in it. And so when I have extra of all those things, then I just cook up some soup and freeze it.
Gloria, your voice is a lot quieter than Stephen's, so I'd like to ask you to speak up a little so we can hear all the interesting things you have to say.
Another wonderful part is that which most CSAs and most CSA members really appreciate is regular newsletters. I do ours every other week. Some CSAs do newsletters every week, and so you're getting an idea of what's happening on the farm, what's happening to the farmers, what's happening to the soil. Did it freeze? Was it 110 degrees? You know, did things burn, or how the crops are doing? And also, we do a spring potluck and a fall potluck, and invite members to come to the farm and do some work with us, have a big potluck, do a music jam, and just be a part of the farm for a weekend.
And people are welcome during the week. Otherwise, sometimes families might come during the week and just pitch in on weeding or something with us if that works for them. So, and then we also have a core group of about 8 people that we meet with if there are decisions about the operation of the farm, either the harvest projection, the plan of what we're growing, or, you know, some issue like land ownership or putting a well in or something that we have to deal with, or just general organization of the CSA, communication, putting a website together, all of those things. Our core group people, we meet and make those decisions mutually. So it's not the sort of more conventional business model of a sole proprietor, of a farmer just out there on his own making all the decisions and, you know, trying to deal with everything alone. We're actually, many of the people in the community of members have very valuable skills, legal skills, or, you know, budgeting skills, or planning skills, building plans.
Two of our members in San Francisco, they put together our website. They did many hours of work putting our website together.
Let's mention your web address at this point, because not everybody can stay with us for the hour, and if you'd like more information about Live Power Community Farm, you can go to
www.livepower.org, LiveePower.org.
And everything that we've been talking about so far, all the topics we've mentioned, the farm, the apprenticeship program, the CSA, the more information about associative economics and about the farm networking proposal that we'll talk about in a moment, it's all there at www.livepower.org.
Joanna, I could also, if you like, give our phone number.
Yes.
Or email address.
Yes, please.
The phone number is 707-983-8196, and email is livepower@igc.org.
livepower@igc.org.
Yes.
Can you repeat the phone number again, please?
707-983-8196.
That's the contact information for Live Power Community Farm, Stephen and Gloria Decatur, who are my guests today on Wild Oak Living here on KZYXNC, listener-supported community radio. This is, as you might have guessed, a pre-recorded program. We are recording this program on Saturday, May 3rd, and it will air on May 15th, so there won't be any call-ins today. However, Stephen and Gloria are very happy to answer your questions or inquiries about the CSA program or about any other aspect of their farm, and you can do that by going to lifepower.org and clicking on the contact button, or by sending email to lifepower@igc.org. Is it .org?
Yeah.
Okay, igc.org. Great. I want to talk about one other aspect of the CSA, which I think is important from the eater's point of view. I must say, in the interest of full disclosure, that I've had the pleasure of sharing a vegetable basket with another family last year, and this year I'm taking the plunge and I'm getting a basket all to myself.
All right. Yeah. That's great.
And it's just, I found it to be a wonderful experience to see the season reflected in the content of a basket that you get every week.
Exactly.
I mean, when I lift the burlap cover that covers the basket, it is such anticipation and always such wonderful surprise, because you never quite know what's going to be in it. And then you see what's in it, and then your mind starts working about, oh, what can I do with this and what can I do with that? And then your newsletter arrives, and there's usually recipes in the newsletter that inspire me to try new things with the content of the basket. So I just have to say, it's a really great way to stay connected with the season and with with a local farm like yours, by getting a weekly basket and experiencing in that way what grows in our area. And my understanding is you have two different sizes of baskets, right? One for individuals or small families, and then another one for larger families.
Yeah, most people get the garden share, which is a half bushel basket, and it just depends how much you eat. You know, just like you, Joanna, last year shared that half bushel basket with another family. There's a few other families that do that, or some families share a family size, which is a bushel size, or they get it themselves, depending upon how much they eat at home and, you know, how much vegetables they consume and how many members are in the family.
I must say that if you consciously try to incorporate more veggies into your diet, and all of us, I think it's a good idea for all of us to be doing that, usually I run out, you know, by the following weekend. So usually by the time the following Tuesday rolls around, I'm ready for the next basket. It's rare that I can't figure out how to use the content of the basket.
Yeah, and again, you know, if you had extra, you can always put it up in some way. Freezing or blending into soup and then freezing that. There's a multitude of ways, and it's really nice to be able to then have it later on in the season.
And you also cooperate with other farmers in our area, right, in terms of putting together baskets and adding other offerings to the CSA. My understanding is you work with a farmer that supplies fruit and then grains.
We started working a couple of years ago with Filigreen Farm in Boonville. They're also biodynamic, and we started offering blueberry shares, which have been a major hit because they're just delicious. And we also, last year and the year before, offered some pluots, peaches, and apples and Asian pears. I'm not sure this year, unfortunately, this frost has been just incredible, and Filigreen lost their peach crop.
Oh, goodness.
Lost their pluots, and it's pretty sad. It's been a pretty cold spring for all of us. But their blueberries are holding strong, so there's going to be lots of blueberries.
The apples and pears will happen, and I'm sure other things will appear. So.
And you also have a grain component now in your CSA, right?
Yeah, exactly. Grain shares from Winborn Farms up in, she lives up in Fort Jones in the Scotts Valley, and sends those grain shares down. It's really, we've been getting the grain shares, and, you know, she puts in there a cereal mix and a pancake mix and whole grains, wheat and barley and sometimes sometimes rye, and then cornmeal. And
those are all freshly ground before she sends them out. So they're, you know, good fresh grains.
And this year I'm just starting a rice share. We connected with Masa Organics over in the Central Valley. It's a small family farm that's doing rice organically. And they also just had a big article in Savor magazine.
So we are at the 40-minute mark of our interview, so that means we have about 15 minutes left to talk about all those other topics that we wanted to talk about today. I just wanted to ask you, since this program will be airing after the beginning of this year's CSA season, if our listeners are listening to this on May 15th and are interested in signing up for your CSA, do you still have openings? Is it still possible to do that?
Yeah, I think I will have openings still, so just give me a call or send me an email.
Can you reiterate the phone number and the email again?
Phone number is 707-983-8196, and the email is livepower, livepower, at igc.org.
And I'd like to say that, you know, we can't talk about costs in this program, but, you know, as somebody who's done your CSA share, who's gotten your CSA share before, I just want to mention that I personally felt that I got more than my money's worth. I mean, I definitely felt like getting vegetables in this way, of having a basket of you know, in season fresh produce, was well worth, you know, the cost. In terms of, you know, if I compared it to buying food at other sources, which. So I just want to say that.
And it also actually works out better for the farmer, because that money is all going to the farmer. And, you know, if a farmer sells to a retail outlet, then there's all the markup has to be subtracted.
The middle person.
Yes. And also, even if a farmer goes, is farmer's marketing, you have to load everything. You have to be there or pay somebody to sell. Not all of it will sell. 20% of what you grow won't be cosmetic in your right size or shape. It'll get left behind. And so you are getting retail, but, and then how many markets you might have to go to create, you know, enough total income to maintain the farm. So you are getting retail, but you are, in that instance, actually absorbing quite a bit of the retailer's expenses.
Yeah, I wanted to say that is actually I and other people that I know that are doing CSA, that's what one of the reasons that motivates us to do CSA, in addition to getting wonderful fresh food, is, you know, we know that the money that we spend on it goes directly to the farm and to the farmer and to the people who grow the food.
That's right, and that's the reason we're here, and we're still here 20, you know, 30 years later, is because people have been supporting us directly in that way. And I know from when we transitioned and became a 100% community-based as a farm, that then we had a much more stable economic picture. And so I think it helps on both ends. It helps on the farmer end, and it also helps on the eater's end.
Yeah.
And on the farmer end, it's just wonderful to know when you're growing all this food. It's wonderful to know the families who are getting that produce and know the children, and through the years we have to have members who have been with us for 20 years and their kids have been raised.
And also every week when you deliver the produce, we get to interact with you and we get to find out what's happening on the farm, and it's there's a much more human component to that as well. Stephen, maybe this would be a good time to segue to our last big topic, which is the topic of associative economics and the farming network proposal that you are working on.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing would be, you know, it's most ideal if the community of members of eaters for a farm are right in the same place as the farm, because then they can go to the farm, you know, after work and work for an hour or something, weeding. It's good for everybody. That would be the ideal. And in our case, because we started this 20 years ago and it was a new idea, and in Covelo we didn't have enough members to meet that 160 threshold level of members that would create the economic basis to operate the farm. So we ended up, you know, working with several communities, and we had a lot of connections in the Bay Area from the students that had visited the farm, and so we started off that way. But this is definitely a viable way to create a local food system and, you know, create a viable economic basis for local farms. And the neat thing about it is that once a given farm has got its community of members, then you could have another farm right next door with another community of members, and both those farms are just doing their job. They're not competing with each other. And if you think of how many, you know, even in Covelo, all the food's being driven in, and how many people are coming in and out of the supermarket, you know, 160 households, we could have a lot of viable farms in our county. And we would save all of that transportation cost and pollution that results from it. And it wouldn't cost eaters any more than what they spend now. It's just that people have to work together, have the same idea, and those eaters have to take their money and direct it to a local farm that they are working in partnership with to make sure that that farm can be viable and maintain and do its job. And so I put a draft of a proposal for Mendocino County to try to create some kind of a network for community-based farming development, for education about it in the county, and for helping farmers to learn the skills and practices of working with a community in a community-based farming form. And you know, this network could promote education about community-based farming through field days at existing farms such as ours. We've actually done 3 of those field days so far this year, where people from the public can just come in and see what can be done, you know, working in this way. And then, you know, we also need to start a registry of people that might be willing to work with a local farm in a community-based approach for getting their food, because those people then would become members of a farm. We would also want to develop a list of people that might want to farm this way and would be willing to work with a community of eaters. And then when we have enough eaters lined up to be the starting group for a farm, we could actually start a new farm and have some chance of having that work and be successful economically. Then there's also the issue of land and where those farms can start. And there are actually people in the county, we've met several people that have excess land that they maybe aren't using or would be willing to see a part of it used to, you know, grow food for local supply, and would be willing to make arrangement with a farmer. So we need to develop a kind of a land link program also for farms. If people have property and they're retiring and they're going to cash that land out, instead of having it cashed out to development or, you know, lost to farming, if we could develop a kind of a land link program that we could connect an incoming farmer with an outgoing farmer and work out appropriate arrangements so that the land can stay in agriculture. And I think we need to, at the same time, use legal forms of putting an agricultural easement that secures that land permanently into the future as a productive farm with organic or biodynamic agricultural practices, for instance, and that decommoditizes it to its agricultural value at least, so that then it can transfer to another farmer in the next generation. And there are legal ways of doing that. We have done that with our property, actually. So we are familiar with some of the organizations that have been doing that and the ways that it can be done. And so trying to create a network that would start to, you know, educate the public about this so that people can make that choice of changing from buying in a supermarket to working with a local farm for their food, because it's really the people that are eating that support whatever agriculture we have, and it's really the people that are eating that have the power to make that change. The farmers can't make it by themselves, no matter how much they might want to. They can't do that. But by working together, people could do that. So that's what this proposal is about, and we just put it on our website for the time being until we can get an organization started that would have its own website and would start to create this network. But I ran across a website in Canada. It's called Ecoterre, and
it's E-C-O-T-E-R.
No, it's Ecoterre.
Ecoterre.
How do you spell that?
U-I-T-E-R-R-E.
Okay. Anyway, I think it was a nonprofit, and they have other programs, but they have a ecological farming program, and they have started working with farms, and they have something like 95 farms that are part of that network, and they do something like 20,000 baskets, and they also do meat, and, you know, so it's been quite successful in like revitalizing a local agriculture. They do have some standards. One would be that the farming be ecological, you know, biodynamic or organic. Another was that the farm would distribute at least half of its produce through the member community, at least initially. So if a farm couldn't get enough members to start just out of its membership, maybe it would do some marketing, you know, to initially get started, but it would have a goal of at least 50% or more of its product would be worked directly through a community. And that, you know, 75% of what would be in the baskets at least would be produced on the farm, because there are, CSA has become somewhat of a misnomer, because there are boxes out there that aren't connected with the farm at all, other than that the people putting the boxes together buy product from farms all over the place, put them in the box, and then distribute that. And so there needs to be, you know, some standards and guidelines if we're going to really create a community-based form of this new agriculture. And then the other requirement might be that the farms, you know, are willing to work towards supporting developing conscious relationships with the members in the farm, either through core group activity or open house field days, farm celebrations, interaction with the members. So it's not just, you know, a market relationship. It's actually, you know, a community relationship that's developed. And then, of course, several farms can cooperate, like we talked about earlier, of, you know, one farm doing vegetables, one farm doing fruit, one doing grains. But the way that they cooperate is, each farmer is brought together with the membership community and retains their identity as an individual farmer, and the money for that share goes to that farm instead of one farm acting as a middleman for a bunch of other products and farms.
So, for example, you could add a dairy for dairy products, you could add a meat processor, etc.
Yes, you could have other products coming in on the same, you know, community basis, but you want to keep the identity of each of the farmers with the community of eaters, and that's one way of doing that. Like, we have a general meeting in San Francisco at the beginning of the year where all the members hopefully get there, and we gather for an hour or two, and all of the farmers that have the different products are there, and we're in the same room, and we can start to, you know, talk about the needs of the farm and give a projection of the season coming up, and, you know, get feedback from the members, and that way everybody is in a conscious relationship. It's not just a market economic relationship. So this network, we've been kind of keeping a list for the time being of anybody that might want to work with a community-based farm in this county for their food supply. If people that are willing to do that would, you know, call, they can call us for the time being, since we've got this on our website, but hopefully there will be a group of people that come together that create this as a separate entity. But, you know, if we could start to develop a list of people in the county that would want to work with a community-based farm, and the same is true of farmers that would want, that have some skills. You know, we need everything. We need the farmers markets, we need the local co-ops, but we also need these community-based farms, which really have a lot to offer. And we can, there is promotion to some degree for other areas, but there's not really an organization that, so far to help develop the community-based farming in the same way. And so that's what this proposal is about. And so people that would want to work on that would be very welcome if they would get in touch, and we can start to network together on creating that in the county, because I think that this approach to agriculture for us has worked the best of all the different approaches. And so, just speaking out of our experience, that's what I would recommend and promote. And I think that there are a lot of other farms that have had a similar result and have developed at least part of their production into a CSA form.
I'm going to have to jump in here at this point and let you know that you are listening to Wild Oak Living, and my guests are Gloria and Stephen Decatur of Life Power Community Farm in Covelo. We have about 1 or 2 minutes left in this program for you to share any information that I might not have asked you about, and also to again offer your contact information to our listeners.
Yeah, I forgot earlier to mention, Joanna, that, you know, what Steve was talking about, working with other farmers, we are initiating this year. We've been trying to get to this for several years now, but we're going to be working with Adam Gaska, Mendocino Organics, this coming winter, and he is going to offer winter shares to our members. Oh. And so he will, I'm not sure exactly the season, whether it will be exactly the weeks that we are not doing, like we finish up in Thanksgiving, hopefully, then he'll be doing December, January, February, March, and April, providing vegetables during that time. So we'll be talking more about that with our members, and then, you know, it may also be open to other folks to participate in that. And so he's already working hard on that.
Great.
And we're pretty excited about those possibilities there.
Yeah,
you know,
it seems
so
like
we have a year-round vegetable source.
And we have a climate, you know, a county climate to be able to do that. That's great.
Yeah, it's a little harder for us in Covelo.
Yeah,
we're in a frost, pretty heavy frost zone, so we get knocked out during the winter. But Adam's site is actually at a little higher elevation, and he might be able to miss a little bit more of that frost. So I think it's going to be a good possibility.
Well, that's all the time we have, unfortunately. So I would just like to thank you, Gloria and Stephen, and again give you a chance to state your phone number and your email and your website.
The phone number is 707-983-8196. The email is livepower@igc.org, and the website is livepower.org. And we'd like to thank you, Joanna, for inviting us on here today.
Absolutely.
We really appreciate the time.
You're very welcome, and we'll stay in touch and keep our listeners informed about your progress in the farming proposal as well. Thank you so much.
Right.
Thank you.
The future of farming is in all of our hands.
Thank you for tuning into Wild Oak Living today. I'll be back 3 weeks from today with another edition of Wild Oak Living. LaViva Bakers will be with you in the next two Thursdays with her program, The Family Connection. If you have any comments on this program, send me an email, contact@wildoak.org. Coming up, Earth and Sky. Thanks for tuning in.